President Trump has called on Republican-controlled states across the country to redraw congressional maps, and this map answers that call.
North Carolina's congressional districts get even more gerrymandered. Welcome to Carolina Connection. I'm Maddie Policastro.
And I'm Raina Drake. Also this week, protesters say truth and public service at UNC is under attack. Skateboarders on campus say they have no place to shred. At UNC and Duke hospitals, an atypical therapy is helping patients. And UNC students can get their hair cut in the pit for free.
When they love their hair, it's like so rewarding.
It can like really easily make somebody feel so good about themselves.
From the UNC Hussman School of Journalism and Media, this is Carolina Connection. Thank you for joining us. We begin this week with a story about how elections can be decided long before anyone votes. President Donald Trump has been pushing for states to redistrict before next year's election to help keep a Republican majority in the House. This week, the GOP-controlled North Carolina legislature granted his wish. They took a district map that already was considered one of the most gerrymandered in the country and added another likely Republican seat. Marguerite Stuess reports.
Following President Trump's call for redistricting, North Carolina is one of multiple states moving forward with a new congressional map. North Carolina is a closely divided swing state, but Republicans now are likely to win 11 of its 14 congressional districts.
In a democracy, we have to have geographical districts for our representatives to run in. And then we should draw voting districts that reflect those demographic changes the way the population changes.
That is Asher Hildebrand, a Duke University public policy professor and former chief of staff for Democratic Congressman David Price, who represented the Durham-Chapel Hill area until 2022. He says the new map will add another Republican-majority district in the northeast part of the state, the first district, which was originally created as a Black Opportunity District.
They took this competitive district and turned it into an uncompetitive, strongly Republican seat by switching a few of the counties out with an adjoining district that was even more Republican. So now instead of having one deep, deep red district and one kind of purple district, you have two kind of lighter red to medium red districts that almost certainly will both send Republicans to Washington next year. If the districts are drawn in a fair way, you would expect the North Carolina General Assembly to roughly represent the balance of Democrats and Republicans, maybe the balance of Black and white and Latino and other voters, right? And when we gerrymander, we distort that mechanism.
Tyson Moy, an Army veteran and UNC law student, spoke about redistricting's effect on marginalized communities, including veterans and Black citizens. The Black population of the first district will drop from around 39 to 32%.
The legislature just does whatever it wants with the seats and just makes more and more gerrymandered maps and takes away people's right to vote.
The state Senate approved the map Tuesday and the House of Representatives Wednesday. Republican Senator Ralph Hayes explained his party's motivation for changing the map.
Republicans hold a razor-thin margin in the United States House of Representatives. If Democrats flip four seats in the upcoming midterm elections, they will take control of the House and torpedo President Trump's agenda. President Trump has called on Republican-controlled states across the country to redraw congressional maps, and this map answers that call.
And Republican House Majority Leader Brendan Jones responded to the allegations that the new map dilutes the representation of Black voters. Federal courts have ruled that political gerrymandering is okay, but racial gerrymandering is unconstitutional.
Let me be clear and let me emphasize, racial data was not used.
To protect the votes of Black citizens and veterans in District 1, Moy wants to go on the offensive. He wants to work to educate the public on how new congressional districts affect them before the upcoming elections.
You know, we kind of knew going into this week that our chances of success of the legislature were near zero. But it's just a reminder that, you know, the Supreme Court election next year is important and the next elections in 28 are even more important. It's not over, and it's never over until we give up, and we're not going to give up.
North Carolina is not the only state redrawing their maps. Texas and Missouri also have answered President Trump's call to redraw lines in favor of Republicans, and several other states are planning to do the same thing. California and Virginia are among the states that could add more Democratic districts. The battle over congressional lines may be far from over, but so is the fight for seats in states where every vote counts. In Chapel Hill, I'm Marguerite Stuess.
Indivisible Orange County, an activist group that resists the Trump administration, hosted a rally on Franklin Street Friday.
We just felt like we needed to make a statement how important academic freedom is.
That was Ken Williams, one of the organizers. About 25 people criticized both the Trump administration and UNC leaders. Speakers said the university isn't standing up for academic values. Former UNC Law School Dean Gene Nickel, quoting William B. Acock, UNC's second chancellor.
Bill Acock put it this way: political tampering with the educational process can, in short order, drastically lower the quality of American higher education.
Speakers called for the community to stick together and advocate for such things as a reinstatement of the millions of dollars in research funds that UNC lost because of cuts from the Trump administration.
There are a few places on UNC's campus for students to skateboard. Police last month shut down a practice session of the UNC Skate Club and Cobb parking deck. Now, club members are pushing for campus recreation to include an official skate spot in the university's new rec complex that's currently being designed. Brooks Stevenson joined them in the pit to learn more.
In the pit at UNC, members of the UNC Skate Club gather to practice their moves on a rusty red portable grind rail. One member, Christian Nooks, practices his favorite trick, the fakie front one. A member since freshman year, Nooks says the club often practices in the pit because they don't have an official place to skate, and most members can't easily reach off-campus parks.
You know, if you don't have a car, or if you can't carpool, you know, you can't really get to Homestead Park, which is like our closest one, which is closed right now, or Hillsboro, which is even farther.
This lack of access leaves many club members with not a lot of options.
Not being able to like go somewhere dedicated for skateboarding, it, you know, kind of sucks. So we just kind of skate on campus instead.
But on days when it rains, the club has often turned to campus parking decks to skate. On September 7th, UNC police arrived at Cobb parking deck with three patrol cars, effectively shutting down the group's meeting. UNC Media Relations said in a statement, quote, UNC police may ask individuals to leave if they're using a parking facility in a way that is inconsistent with its intended use, particularly if it creates a safety hazard. UNC Skate Club President Julian Vietensen says he understands why police intervened, but also stresses that the club has nowhere else to go.
We understand that there's some liability to skating in a parking deck and there's some potential for something to get damaged. We totally understand that. Just the issue is that there's no other place to go.
Vietensen says the deeper issue for this lack of a formal space is how skateboarders are viewed on campus.
On an ad, you put a cool person on a skateboard, and it's like, oh wow, we're a cool company. But when it comes to actual people who want a skateboard, and that's their passion, we're never really seen as someone as cool. They don't want us anywhere.
The UNC Skate Club has launched a petition urging campus recreation to include a designated skate spot in plans for the new recreation center currently in development. When asked about the possibility of building a skateboard area in the developing center, Campus Recreation Director Jason Halsey said in a written statement, quote, the ultimate goal is to provide a facility that students want and are excited for, one that can meet the very diverse needs of our current and future students. Vietensen says his main goal is simple.
My biggest thing would just be our club and skateboarders being recognized as someone who deserves to have a facility and a space and as a sport.
As a member without a car, Nooks hopes the university takes the club's request seriously. He went on to say the club is thinking more long-term about their goals on campus.
You know, to like be a space for, you know, skateboarders, rollerbladers, to feel like their sport is respected and that there'll always be a place to do it. You know, we're not just people who skateboard, we're Carolina students who are also skateboarders.
While they wait for new developments, the UNC Skate Club continues to practice wherever they can as they hone their skills around campus. In Chapel Hill, I'm Brooke Stevenson.
Volunteer programs at UNC and Duke University hospitals are delivering a different kind of medicine, music. In a stressful environment, performers playing their instruments provide comfort and connection to patients, visitors, and healthcare workers. Here's Carolina Connections' Rachel Moody with more.
If you're ever walking through one of UNC hospitals in Chapel Hill and you hear the soothing sound of a guitar, cello, or some other instrument, you're probably listening to one of the volunteer musicians in a program called Door to Door.
The hospital, you know, it's already stressful. You'll hear loudspeakers, you'll hear codes in the patient rooms, the heart monitors are going, there's a lot of hustle and bustle moving around the hallways.
David Binet is the director of Door to Door and has been playing the violin for over 35 years.
And when we come into a room, you know, someone could be in pain or suffering, and we provide a little bit of respite.
Most of the time, the musicians play in the hallways or lobbies, or, as the program's name suggests, go door to door giving personal performances in patient rooms. About a 25-minute drive away at Duke University Hospital, Chloe Kim stands along a corridor playing A Night in Tunisia on her clarinet as people pass by. Her eyes follow the sheet music clipped to the music stand in front of her. She volunteers for two-hour shifts at the hospital every week.
One reason why I like continue playing my instrument is because of like the bonds that you can form through music. You know, it's a form of language without any language barriers.
Kim is a sophomore at Duke University from South Korea. She's also in the university's chapter of an organization called Music and Memory.
So students go to nursing homes and we create these personalized playlists for the patients and all the elderly people there. And then they could listen to the music and that kind of helps start, give like a little push for their memories.
She hopes to work with dementia patients using music and visual arts in the future. Back in Chapel Hill at the North Carolina Basnet Cancer Hospital, Binet plays violin while Adam Tierney, one of Door to Door's volunteers, plucks the strings on his guitar. They mesh into a whimsical original piece the two composed together.
I remember there was somebody out there sitting on a bench and their head was bandaged up and they sat and listened. And they said that that was the best thing that had happened to them in the month that they had been here.
Tierney started volunteering with Door to Door in 2022. For one of his first performances, lingering COVID-19 restrictions sequestered him to the parking garage during shift change.
And right then is when I knew that I wanted to be a part of this program, to be able to play some music and bring something non-clinical that seems to benefit people really touched me.
Some patients just want to listen to the music, but Binet's had other patients even join him, creating a two-man band for a few short minutes.
And I got called in for a special visit from volunteer services to play for a young patient, and he was a violinist. So I came back, and he had brought his violin, and we did a duet together, and we did play the Bach double, and it was just amazing.
Door to Door plans to host a concert with the band Africa Unplugged on October 30th from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Roper Hall on Medical Drive in Chapel Hill. In Chapel Hill, I'm Rachel Moody.
A conference this week at UNC called ConvergeCon is exploring the impact of artificial intelligence and how it's shaping everything from media to ethics to the job market. I'm joined by Carolina Connections' Gracie Durham, who attended the Town Hall Risk-Reward panel last night. The panel featured a range of experts, including Caroline Baxendale, who works as a video supervisor at CNN. So, Gracie, I know one of the big topics was deepfakes. What did the panelists think about that?
Yeah, so Caroline Baxendale actually had the most to say about deepfakes because she works as a video supervisor at CNN, like you were saying. So this is something she kind of deals with on a daily basis. And she talked about how it's becoming really difficult to tell the difference from deepfakes in real videos. And this applies not just to her, but also to ordinary people just scrolling on social media or trying to look at news channels. So the panel was facilitated by Scott Geyer, who's a professor in the Hussman School of Journalism and Media, and he gave some frightening statistics about the difficulty of depicting high-quality deepfakes.
A recent study by the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers found that people were only able to detect high-quality deepfakes 24.5% of the time. So to flip the script, in that study, 3 out of 4 times, people couldn't tell if it was real or fake.
Yeah, I know when I'm scrolling through social media, it is hard to distinguish between, you know, the deepfakes and what's real. So did Baxendale give any useful tips for discerning AI from real videos?
Yeah, so Baxendale actually specifically works on a team at CNN that helps discern real videos from AI deepfakes, so she had a lot of useful tips.
It impacts me every single day because minute by minute we get thousands of video elements into our systems.
The first most obvious signs Baxendale said you can look for are to check the shadows and lighting in relation to the position of the sun, and this can kind of help you tell if it's looking like it's fake. She also said you can look for strange textures in the photo or fuzziness on the face. She said that the first thing she does personally is just to look into the eyes of the person, if it's a position where you're able to do that, and to try to kind of get a gut feeling before starting the rest of your analysis. She also said if it's more pressing, that you could use some factors like geolocation to verify the accuracy of the video in the surrounding area, and you can also just cross-reference with social media and different internet searches.
Okay, that's really good to know. So I'm also curious, what are the concerns from these news organizations about the mass amounts of video footage they're receiving and having to kind of go through and decipher whether or not they're real?
Yeah, so it's definitely a scary time for journalism, and Baxendale really shared that sentiment because she said she has a constant fear about losing credibility as a journalist because she might accidentally post a deepfake rather than a real video. So I think this also means just for us as viewers, like whether it's social media or news, we really need to be constantly skeptical of the things that we're seeing and kind of start to cross-reference what we're seeing on a pretty daily basis.
Carolina Connections' Gracie Durham, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome, Maddie.
You're listening to Carolina Connection, the weekly student newscast from the UNC Hussman School of Journalism and Media. I'm Maddie Policastro.
And I'm Raina Drake. If you're thinking of switching up your look or trusting a friend with a pair of scissors, you're in luck. Every Friday, in front of the undergraduate library, you can get your hair cut free of charge by student stylists, many of whom have only recently started cutting hair, or have never cut hair at all. The founders of Free Haircut Fridays are a group of friends with a mission to promote community on campus. Emmy Berger and Liana Rieschi tried out the impromptu salon.
What are we getting today?
A haircut.
Every Friday, rain or shine, the sounds of electric razors echo across the front of UNC's undergrad library. The popularity and success of Free Haircut Friday has rocketed since its start in August.
Tell me your name.
Emil Kaigo.
All right, who's cutting your hair?
Daniel Orengel. He wanted a scissor haircut, so I'm just cutting off about a third of his hair all around. And yeah, we're going to see what happens.
Yeah, no, a third in the top, whatever it takes on the sides.
Whatever it takes.
Just, I trust you to make it look nice.
Students just like Petkoff put their faith in these guerrilla barbers every Friday, searching for community and good conversations along with their quick trim.
How are you feeling so far?
Amazing. It's like therapy.
All right, so what's your deepest, darkest secret?
Me? This is not therapy anymore.
A 2023 analysis by CNN and the payment service Square found men haircuts costs averaged almost $35 nationwide, and the average women's cut would set you back almost $50. But a lot of salons charge much more. On a student budget, regular haircuts are often out of the question.
My name is Shiva Rajbandari. I'm here because I desperately need a haircut, as you can see, but I'm so broke. I'm a little bit nervous because often people fail haircuts, and these are amateur haircutters, but I'm willing to take the risk because I have $6 in my bank account.
I really don't want to make any money from this, because if we make like any money, it's like, how can we make more? I want it to be more about the community than like, how can we like profit maximize and all that like business jargon. I don't want to make everything my job. I like having hobbies, and this is a hobby.
Carolina Connection reporter Liana Rieschi got her turn in the barber chair, conducting an interview as Orengel began to shape her new do.
I'm cutting an undercut into Liana. This is my first ever undercut. We love trying new things here at Free Haircut Friday.
How far up, like...
How far up Luke's head?
Luke, can she touch your head for a second?
No, I don't... I didn't ask that. He asked.
Like, touch the point you want.
Let's do, like, right there.
Okay.
UNC is home to many clubs and traditions, and these self-taught hairstylists hope to keep the haircuts coming for as long as possible. The team of Free Haircut Fridays pride themselves on being welcoming to all, encouraging anyone to pull on a cape and get a free haircut.
The reason it got good is because, like, Alyssa joined, Luke joined, Bonnie joined, Graham's a new member today. Like, the people that came are the reason it's become a community.
Alyssa Snively has the most experience in the group. She learned how to cut hair at the age of 12, watching her hairdresser as she worked and practicing in the studio.
It's like addicting. Yeah. Like when people, like, you see their faces, like when they love their hair, it's like so rewarding. And then, like, they remember that. And also, like, you can, like, really easily make somebody feel so good about themselves.
So next Friday, if you feel your bangs are getting a little long or just want a nice conversation, head down to UNC, where the barber chairs are always open.
In Chapel Hill, I'm Liana Rieschi.
And I'm Emmy Berger.
Finally this week, we're seeing more jackets and colorful leaves around campus, which also means restaurants are rolling out a fall staple to fit the changing weather. In Chapel Hill, there's a big demand for all things pumpkin. Carolina Connections' Anthony Guerra Flores went out to try some.
Here on Franklin Street in Chapel Hill, there is no shortage of fall spirit. The main culprit of this spooky season is pumpkin spice. There's Starbucks' iconic pumpkin spice latte, Pope's pumpkin pie smoothies, and even pumpkin spice wings. There seems to be a high demand for pumpkin. Opal Dye, Epilogue's barista lead, says it's a yearly tradition.
It brings crowds, it brings the people who wait for those flavors all year long. So people are really dedicated to that pumpkin spice, like every year.
And Epilogue, which previously avoided selling pumpkin-flavored drinks, decided to incorporate it to their menu.
Whenever I first started, I was told that we actually don't do pumpkin here, but I know that pumpkin was recently brought in here, and it has been a really big seller. We sell out pretty quickly to the point where I have to tell people, like, come back tomorrow or the next day, just because now that it has been allowed here, like, every other drink is a pumpkin drink.
And across the street at Starbucks, customer Alex Gonzalez Bautista says pumpkin spice is the perfect drink, especially when you have a sore throat.
There's nothing as good as a nice warm pumpkin spice latte. It's just very soothing for the throat, and it's very delicious.
And he, like many others, is excited when pumpkin spice is finally back.
I definitely look forward to it. It's definitely something that I am kind of looking at the clock for. Yeah, so I would say I'm somebody who does wait for the pumpkin spice.
And despite the basic stereotypes that come with pumpkin spice, Gonzalez Bautista says it's worth a try.
I feel like I used to be one of those people that was like, I'm not trying a pumpkin spice. And then I had it and I was like, well, I think a lot of people just like hear that it's just very popular and they'll be like, I'm not going to try that. But I think they should give it a try. I think that it's definitely worth it. Even if you get like basic allegations, like I think it's worth trying.
And so I did. I tried Pope's pumpkin pie smoothie. And it's pretty good. Ultimately, it's definitely important to remember the intensity of the pumpkin spice craze. Dai says the demand can be overwhelming.
It has been a little bit hard to keep up with the demand of the syrup. I know we had a pumpkin spice horchata, and it sold out 3 times while I was on shift. It's definitely hard to keep up with the demand.
And pretty soon, pumpkin spice will be gone and peppermint will be here to take its place. In Chapel Hill, I'm Anthony Guerra Flores.
Thank you for listening to Carolina Connection. We are a production of the UNC Hussman School of Journalism and Media. We hope you enjoyed your time with us. Our technical directors are Kevin Paris and Kalias Galbraith Fau DeCanto. I'm Raina Drake.
And I'm Maddie Policastro. There's more to be discovered at carolinaconnection.org. You can also find our stories on Instagram, Facebook, Blue Sky, or wherever you get your podcasts. Now, back to weekend programming on 97.9 The Hill.